Alrighty, Pittsburgh Steeler fans. It is time for the second half of Know Your Enemy. Once again, my name is Michael Beck, joined by a chuckling Jeffrey Benedict. What is going on? Did I say my name wrong? What happened this time? What did I do?
No, alrighty. Alrighty? It's the most like I am Canadian.
Alrighty. I am wearing
all our friends
maple leaf today. I am that Canadian. Gosh darn it.
Alrighty.
Alrighty.
All right, yeah, we're gonna have to get Keith Butler on this podcast. Guys can go.
All right, let's get to the super chat that we got earlier on the show before I get completely ripped apart. Comes in from Sean Manahan. He put $5 in the tip jar. He asked if there's any chance this season we will put an inverted cover two that we saw from Super Bowl 43, but with Minka Fitzpatrick playing the corner spot and a corner playing back at safety. Jeffrey, what do you think?
Yeah, with Sutton? There's a chance there. Like, I hadn't thought about that. That's actually an interesting one. I could totally see Minka up at corner. He's played it. He can do cornerback. It's not like Terrell Edmonds where you're like, oh, you can cover, but you're going to have to do something different all of a sudden. And, yeah, I can see it. I can see them putting Sutton back and Minka up. There is definitely a possibility of that.
Okay. So to kind of get back on our scheduled programming is – oh my gosh. Oh, I can't say anything without either making an idiot of myself or just Jeffrey chuckling no matter what. I don't know. It's just a vicious cycle here at BTSC. But Jeffrey, what are your overall thoughts of this Sunday's game coming up? Are you excited from the Steelers' perspective? First time in Heinz Field with fans in the stands. That environment's going to be juiced up coming off a huge win. Honestly, I'm really excited to watch the Steelers play this one. I think they're going to be firing all cylinders as opposed to what they did in Buffalo, where it's kind of hang on, just hold on to the rope until the end and try to sneak one out, which is exactly what they did. I think we're seeing a complete opposite Steelers team this weekend. What are your thoughts?
I think I have to agree with our guest. I think we're going to see a low-scoring game. These two teams combined in week one through three quarters combined, the Steelers and Oakland Raiders scored 16 points in three quarters of football. Obviously, the Steelers had a special teams touchdown, and the Raiders and Ravens just went off scoring, trading scores back and forth in the fourth quarter and in overtime. But I think we're going to see a lower scoring game, which I like because the Steelers need to get the run game right. They need to get it going. They need to work the ball around, and having that a nice low scoring game gives you some leeway, kick some Chris Boswell field goals, keep the game going, get your run game going, get Najee Harris involved, he was chiding you, and I'm sitting there thinking I'm gonna try and avoid saying the team name so I don't say Oakland.
That's why I've been just saying
the Oakland Raiders. They're the Oakland. I don't care where they are. They're still the Oakland Raiders.
Even when they're in LA.
The Oakland Raiders are now playing in Las Vegas. That's the truth, people. Oh, gosh. But, yeah, I think we're going to see a low-scoring game, and I really like that.
Okay, interesting. I am kind of under the assumption that the Steelers might have a hot start. Honestly, like, it will sound super homer, but I feel like the Steelers are going to get the jump on this team from the get-go. And like, just kind of one of those games where the environment's right. The Raiders are coming off this super emotional up and down crazy overtime victory on a Monday night. They're very banged up and injured. I think there's a lot of factors pointing in the Steelers' direction. First and foremost is how healthy the Steelers are. Like Coach Tomlin even said at his press conference today, like, yeah, from a health perspective, you know, we're good. And then the Raiders, on the other hand, everyone's hurt on that team. And they just went through the ringer emotionally. Do you think that could be a factor at all, that they played this insane game Monday night, five quarters long, pretty much going the distance in overtime, one last day to prepare? Do you think those factors could sway the result on Sunday at all, or is that just all kind of just semantics?
I think the one fewer day is an impact, and I do think, you know, an overtime game like that, where it was a crazy game and there was a lot of hitting. Those guys were really going at each other. And that could very well have an impact. Man, think of that overtime game I cannot get over any. I'm sorry. I'm just completely out of the blue, just jumping off the rails here. But did you watch? Did you see the game winning touchdown?
Of course I did. Watching the Ravens lose.
David Carr just
tune in for that.
Derek Carr, not David. See, I'm gonna be bad. It's gonna get bad here. Derek Carr just like. I mean, he took like three steps back and just threw a prayer.
Oh, it was.
I mean, he just chucked it.
Back foot. It was ugly.
And Marlon Humphrey's just like, oh, I got beat. I'll stop running.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And then that's it. That's the game. That was the game. It was bizarre. Also, I kept hearing it was a really great game. So I watched the whole thing today just to prep for the show.
It's a great
and it was a terrible game.
It's a great last 5 minutes.
Terrible game. And then it was like the whole game, the offenses can't figure out, the defenses are dominating. And then like the last 5 minutes, the defenses are like, all right, we're done. We're just gonna, you know, we're here to just get our paycheck now. We don't care. And the offenses go off. And I don't know. I didn't like it. It was a crappy game to me.
So this is a really good super chat here. From Monster19. Hopefully I got that right. He puts $1.99, or she puts $1.99 in the tip jar. Asks, any chance Najee runs for 75 plus yards? Of course, I think he only hit 48 yards or 45 against the Bills. What do you think, Jeffrey? Could they kind of start getting things in motion for Najee Harris to have a better game?
No. I don't see it. I really don't. This team right now, as it is, no, I think they need to work on the run game. Maybe if it's low scoring and he can break one, he can hit something. What I really want to see, and this is what really killed the Steelers against Buffalo, how many times did Ben Roethlisberger have Najee Harris open in the flats and just flat out miss him?
I think it was three complete whiffs.
That's where he made his yards in the preseason. That's where he's going to be deadly is when he slips out there. And now he doesn't have to worry about the fact that our offensive line doesn't know what they're doing. Now he doesn't have to worry about the defensive line. He can outrun the linebackers. He can truck a cornerback. He can juke people. You get that man in the open field, he's going to collect some ankles. He's going to take some bodies, and he is going to get some yards. And Ben's just like, hey, Najee, are you 78 feet tall? No? Are you like, can you Chase Claypool this? If not, wide open. 6 yards from Ben Roethlisberger, no one in between him, and Ben's just like, I'm throwing it way over your head. And you see Najee like jumping with one hand, just tipping the ball, trying to tip it to himself so he's a chance to do something. That's terrible. If they get that sorted out, Najee Harris could have a big game, but I don't see 75 rushing yards yet. Not with the way this offensive line is playing.
I kind of have a prediction for this game, and tell me if I'm crazy, but well, you probably will. But
crazy.
Oh, there you go. So Ben Roethlisberger is 3 touchdown passes away from 400 on his career. He'd be the 8th person to do so in NFL history. We all know, watching these Steeler games, when someone's close to a record, Coach Tomlin like kind of likes to push the envelope so they can do it. This is the first time the Steelers are playing at home and in front of a full house since, 2019. Do you think the Steelers try to push this a little bit more game plan wise, where Ben Roethlisberger is kind of the feature in this game to try to have this kind of nice story in front of the fans where he can have these 3 touchdown passes, get to 400, be this nice little story. In the back of my mind, I feel like that's how it kind of plays out. Am I crazy aside from the usual reasons, or is this something that is definitely a possibility?
Oh, I'm going to go with you being crazy, Michael. The way Ben played in week 1, like,
not great.
I know you like the storyline, but look at the quarterback play we had in week 1 and tell me you're going to be like, you know what we should do in week 2 is just have Ben throw it all the time. Like, that's not how you want to go this. Like, if he's starting off and he's a little rough still, like, you're talking we're down points off defensive turnover. You know, you're talking, we don't want that. We don't want that. So I think you're going to see, again, you're going to see Matt Canada do a lot of motion. You're going to see a lot of runs. You're going to see a lot of the same setup you saw in Buffalo, because that's what they really need to get going for this offense to thrive. It's way too early in the season, and this isn't the game to start abandoning, you know, the formula and just say, well, Ben, hopefully you have it. Hopefully we can just win with you throwing it.
So do you think Ben Roethlisberger is completely washed? Are these what people were saying were true, or Are we going to be kind of wishing that he wasn't the guy this year, but by year's end? What's the vibe right now?
I don't think that at all. I think we saw Ben start to settle down. I honestly think fans, stadium, like the whole atmosphere. Ben's always been a very, you know, roller coastery type of quarterback. He's always been a guy who's in the moment. You know, when he travels far and's in front of a hostile crowd, he doesn't play as well. All that kind of stuff. I think you saw, to me, especially the fact that he was overthrowing everything early, and he was just strong. Like, he was pushing balls too far. If he's leading someone, it was always leading him too far. I think you're seeing a little bit of adrenaline there. I think you're seeing a little bit too much excitement. So I think he will settle it down. I think he'll be fine. But I also think it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get going, for him to hit midseason form. And personally, part of it is I'm hoping that's the case. This team needs Ben Roethlisberger to be in midseason form late in the season. Because he's not going to – he's in my opinion, he's old enough. He's not going to be a guy that can carry a team for 17 games. He's not going to be that guy. The longer we can go and just kind of ease him in and get him going, you know, that's fine by me. We want these guys for the playoffs. Ben, Najee, we want them rolling the offensive line. We want them gelled and going. We want Claypool going off. We want all that end of the season into the playoffs. And what we saw in Buffalo – was heartening because you saw a team win when we didn't have that. And if we can pull off enough wins to just make it to the playoffs and have those guys going, that'd be the best.
Oh, that would be beautiful. We have talked to spend a little bit of time on the offensive side of the ball, but we really should talk about this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, because holy smokes, that was an unbelievable performance against the Buffalo Bills. From kickoff to final whistle, that was dominance straight up against one of the best offenses in the NFL. That was a beautiful performance. Before we get into like this game itself, when speaking about this defense, talent-wise, have they proved to you that this could be as talented a defense as one that we saw, say, going back to 2008?
I wouldn't put them on that level. I would not put them on that level. They've got some guys. You know, they've got the Cam Hayward. They've got the TJ Watt. Melvin Ingram looks like a fine. Highsmith, he's going to get his, but the first game he wasn't great. He drew a holding penalty. He had some good plays, don't get me wrong, but he's not that level. He's not going yet. He hasn't had that game yet. I don't think 2008, you give me like a 2007 defense, 2006, where they were kind of coming together, Lamar Woodley before he became dominant, you know. I think you have something there when you have like was it 2006 right after the Super Bowl when it was no, it was 2007 when Woodley was a rookie. I think we can pull that kind of defense off. I don't think we're quite 2008 level yet.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, no, that's totally fair. It's also different eras, but what were your overall thoughts of that game? Was that as impressive as I saw it to be? Because that was one excellent game from that group.
I was really worried about that game because the Bills do so many wide receivers. They play so many wide receivers, and they went wide receiver crazy in that game. Like they averaged 3.5 wide receivers per snap. It's insane. Like they didn't even like average. They averaged like a third of a tight end every two out of every three snaps. They had a tight end on the field. Like they didn't even play their good tight ends. Running backs barely got to play. Like they just went wide receivers at us, threw it out there because that's their offense. But also I think they went farther because you look at our roster. You're saying where are the question marks? Well, yeah, defensive back. That was our number one question mark heading into this game. They spread us out. We were going 5-6 defensive backs a play. Very rarely did we even get three defensive linemen on the field. And they answered the call. And really with some creativity, the way they protected Trey Norwood, who had a really fine game and a phenomenal game, if you're counting the fact that it was his first game and he's a 7th-round pick rookie, right? No one thought this guy was NFL ready going into the draft. Nobody. If they thought he was ready to be a nickel corner on NFL defense, he would have been gone in the 4th round. He lasted to the 7th. Nobody thought this guy was going to do this good. But the way they had him in, then they had Millett come in for a while. They were switching Minka Fitzpatrick and him. not just moving Minkah around to make more dangerous situations and answer, you know, fill holes and answer problems, but moving Trey Norwood around so that no one really got a chance to see his flaws and be able to exploit them in whatever position he was playing. Like, you didn't have long enough. So that was really great how they survived that. And that gives you a lot of hope for the defensive backs. This game coming up is going to test the Steelers in a very different direction, though. Very different.
Now, before we get into this game specifically, I want to ask about Cam Sutton, because he made that incredible play on that fourth down stop, that fourth and one, that tackle, that recognition, A1. That is as good as he's going to get. That is a 100 out of 100 football IQ play. On that flea flicker, he stuck to Stephon Diggs and knocked the ball out of the air. That is a play no one's talking about, but Cam Sutton made that play. He made plays all game long, and he was the guy that they were targeting. Sure, they scored that touchdown on him, but that was literally a perfect pass. That, an inch to the left, inch to the right, that was incomplete. Cam Sutton was all over Gabe Davis, I believe it was. Is Cam Sutton that guy? Is he a dude for us? Did the Steelers find something in Cam Sutton? Is this the reason why they let Steven Nelson walk?
Okay, in the passing game, we saw what I expected from Cam Sutton. He gave up receptions, tackled the catch. He got beat by a great throw when the cut by the receiver got him turned around. And, you know, if you're facing away from the quarterback, you're covering the width of your shoulder. That's the old saying. He was trying to watch the guy's eyes. The guy did some late hands. Great throw, great work by the receiver in that situation, seeing how Cam Sutton had gotten himself turned around. Sutton did a good job recovering. His recovery was really good. He made that throw very difficult. He consistently made it hard on the offense. And that's really, in the modern NFL, where there is no such thing as a lockdown corner. There really isn't. The rules have taken that completely out of the game. You can't just shut somebody down one-on-one. The NFL rules won't let you. Cam Sutton is a very good cornerback. When you talk about that fourth and one stop, and furthermore, if you watch in the first quarter, when they were up, when they had that first kickoff, he had a tackle on Stephon Diggs where they had Diggs on Trey Norwood, and they tried to run a little out route with him. And very, you know, Joe Hayden-esque, he jumps in there and makes a hit as soon as Stephon Diggs gets the ball. Stephon Diggs is down. Trey Norwood's chasing Stephon Diggs. Cam Sutton makes the tackle. Those were the first two legit tackles for a loss I've seen in his career. Right? In 2020, he had a sack where the quarterback escaped the pocket, was running for his life, and when he ran out of bounds 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage, Cameron Sutton was the closest player to him. That was his sack. He had a tackle for a loss where a guy fell down, and Cameron Sutton walked up and touched him on the shoulder to down him. Like, that was his tackle for a loss. This is not Cam Sutton's game. And he really added that, really developed that this season. So, yeah, Cam Sutton, phenomenal what I saw there. A lot of growth from him, and I think he's going to be a very solid starting cornerback. I think as the season goes on, we're going to see he's a Steven Nelson, right? Don't put him higher than that. He's going to be a Steven Nelson, just a cheaper version. And I think, honestly, with what he showed there, he can actually be that. I've been saying if he's 80% of Steven Nelson for one-third the cost, that's great. I think he can legit be exactly what Steven Nelson was for the Steelers.
You said that exact phrase to me about 15 times throughout this offseason off air. So, ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey is sticking to his guns 100%, just so you know. But aside from that, of course, we're talking about the defensive backs, and we talked about Darren Waller in the first half. How the heck are the Steelers going to stop this guy? Can the Steelers be the team that stops this guy from this ridiculous run he's been on? Because like I've mentioned, and it should be in an article that's dropping on Thursday morning, Darren Waller is the key to this game. If the Steelers can find a way to stuff him, the Raiders have no hope, because seriously, he has been their offense for the last about 10 games. Can they stop this guy, or is slowing this guy the best case scenario? Slowing being like 75 yards.
I got good news for you. The Steelers are the perfect team to stop this. They are the team to stop this, because first off, you have Terrell Edmunds. Like, Minkah Fitzpatrick was moving around this game, and Terrell Edmunds, the Steelers were dedicated against Buffalo to keeping two safeties deep. Dedicated to it, right? That's not going to be the case in Oakland. You're going to see single high safety. You're going to see Minkah Fitzpatrick as that single high safety. You're going to see Terrell Edmunds up. When not Oakland, when Las Vegas, the Raiders, go
the Buffalo, you know, Raiders,
multiple wide receivers, they spread it out. They do that a lot with running backs and everything. They'll do heavy sets and then go five wide. When they do that, you're going to see a Terrell Edmonds on Darren Waller. And you're going to see something that people will probably go crazy about. You're going to see Joe Schobert on Darren Waller with Minka Fitzpatrick behind him. You're going to see that. You're going to see someone in zone behind him, Joe Schobert up on him, so that if he does go deep, yeah, he's going to beat Joe Schobert deep. Of course he's going to beat Joe Schobert deep, but you have help. You have that bracket, which is what our guest was talking about, bracket coverage. When the linebackers, you see a linebacker on a glaring mismatch, it's bracket coverage. There's a safety behind them almost every time. So if it goes deep, they're there to take that play. I think they can. The Steelers in 2018 were one of the worst teams against tight ends. 2019, 2020, both. They're top three in defending tight ends. Expect the Steelers to have a really good game against Darren Waller. I would expect somewhere around about 5 or less yards per target. Either that, wow, or they have to get away from him. If he has over 10 targets, I think you're seeing, you know, five.
Carr loves throwing him the ball, though. He had 19 targets last game. I think Carr just will force it to him.
If you think 19 targets, if he had 80 yards, that's slightly over 4 yards per target. That's a clear win. Like, if he gets 80 yards on 19 targets, the Steelers have to count that as a major victory. If he has one tight end and 80 yards on 19 targets, you're like, yeah, you know what? We won the game because you spent that much of your offense throwing to a guy and you only got 80 yards and a touchdown.
I think this game specifically, the Steelers are also dodging a huge bullet, and we'll get to play a team that was very much like what the Bills were last week, with Josh Jacobs nursing about basically every injury you could at this point in the season because he's beat up. Losing your starting guard for the year, Alex Leatherwood struggling. I just can't foresee Kenyon Drake and John Gruden looking at Kenyon Drake and be like, all right, you're going to be our guy and we're going to give you 30 carries. This game just is not set up for that. If this kind of turns into a shootout style game, is that exactly falling into the Steelers' lap with not shootout style, but Derek Carr having to drop back and throw the ball 50 times? Is that exactly falling into what the Steelers would want to have happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would, and one of the reasons is you look at that week one game, the Raiders weren't winning that game. Like, for most of the game, they were trailing. Oh, yeah. It was close, but they were trailing. Buffalo was playing like 3.5 receivers per play average on snap. Raiders are slightly above two. Slightly above two. They averaged 1.75 tight ends per snap. That means vast majority of the time, they had two tight ends on the field. If you had like at 1.75 tight end / fullbacks, right? They had that extra guy most of the time was a tight end or a fullback. They go big, they go strong. The Bills' top three leading receivers, the tallest is Stephon Diggs at 6 foot. The Raiders have like Darren Waller, 6'6". They use Kenyon Drake in the passing game. He's 6'1". They've got a 6'3" receiver. They have a lot more size. They're going to be a lot more deep speed. They're a very different way of attacking your defense. And I think, honestly, it kind of does play into the Steelers. It's just the Steelers have to adapt to a very different offense that they're defending.
So with exactly what you just said, talking about their sizes, could this be the week that Kelo Witherspoon gets off that healthy scratch list, of course, being traded for just a few days before the season, being a 6'3" corner? Could he be in the lineup? Could Carl Joseph? I know he was put on the protected practice squad list, so I don't imagine he does play and just continues to be on the practice squad for another week. But could he be a guy the Steelers could be looking at to calling up to try to slow down these bigger bodies?
We could see it. I see a Kelo Witherspoon, but I don't know how much we're going to be playing nickel. To me, the story of this game is, you know, the story of week one and week two is week one tested our defensive back depth. With Stephon Tua out, week two is going to test our defensive line depth. You're going to see a lot more 3-4. And the Raiders, if they're smart, they're going to do that. We saw that when Alualu was out. We saw teams be like, so who's your third defensive lineman? Who's your fourth? Who's your fifth defensive lineman? If we're constantly putting you in 3-4, and we're running and we're wearing those guys down, who's your depth? Like Cam Hayward only played 2/3 of snaps. When if you've got Alualu and Wormley, or you've got Chris Wormley and you've got Carlos Davis in as your defensive tackles, that's not good. Right? That's what the Raiders want, and that's the point where they are going to be able to start dictating the game interior to the interior of our line. So while we could see a Witherspoon play, I don't think it would make that much of a difference. Because we're probably not going to spend that much time in nickel. We're going to spend a lot more time in the 3-4 defense. So I'm very interested to see if the Steelers call up an extra defensive lineman. Because I think we had 5 last week.
Yeah, Loudermilk was healthy scratched.
Yeah, we had 5 in that game last week. I would not be surprised to see the Steelers carry 7 active defensive linemen. I don't know if they can do a practice squad call-up. I don't know how those work this year. I haven't paid attention to all that, but I would not be surprised 6 or 7. 7 if they can, 6 if they can't. I just expect that because the Raiders, if they're smart, are going to be coming for our interior line.
Right. Now, we are approaching the top of our show here, so I do want to ask, what would your final score prediction be for Sunday's game between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh?
Well, I expect a very low-scoring game. With a late touchdown to make it 13-6. Ooh,
very low scoring. See, I'm thinking that crowd juice and like that emotional roller coaster the Raiders have been on. I think it just falls into the Steelers' lap. They usually play really, really good in their home opener. I think the Steelers win this one in a blowout style fashion, 31-10. Honestly, I think this is falling perfectly into this game to just the Steelers methodically move the ball down the field, score with some frequency, and just hold the Raiders down. I think the Raiders are just in a bad spot right now. They'll get healthy, they'll get good again, but I just don't think this is their week.
I think we're going to see Max Crosby do a number on Chukwuma Okorafor.
But then they don't have Yannick Ngakoue on the other side. I think that's where you focus your double teams. You line slide towards Max Crosby and just tell Okorafor to worry about his outside gap. You just slide the entire line that way. If he's cutting back in, you have Trey Turner there in support. There's things you can do because that Raiders D line is beat up. I think that's the game plan. Is you're just like, all right, let's focus our assets on this guy. That's what I do.
I think we can both agree then that to me, the story of this game is seriously the interior of the line. If on offense, we need to win the interior. On defense, we got to win the interior. Where Derek Carr was able to do damage against the Ravens is when he was able to step up. They had that edge rush coming, but he was consistently able to step up in the pocket, and that's why they lost that game. If the Steelers are going to beat the Raiders and to neutralize Derek Carr, you have to have bodies there when he steps up in the pocket. Like Josh Allen faced, you know, that's how Cam Hayward got his sack. He had to step up in the pocket, and Cam Hayward's just waiting for him. Guys, the Steelers, if they can do that, they can win the interior of the line. I think we win this game easily.
Last question for you here tonight, Jeffrey. Who would you predict to be the Steelers player of the game? When all the dust is settled, who will be the best player after the Steelers play the Raiders?
I'm going with Najee Harris. I think
wouldn't get 75 yards, but he would be the
rushing
player of the game.
I didn't say he wouldn't get 75 yards rushing. I also said if Ben Roethlisberger can throw passes that actually hit him in the chest, he's going to tear it up, and I think he does. And I think fourth quarter, you see him break a low-scoring game and score a touchdown that gives the Steelers
first
a win.
Of his career. Now, for me, I'm going to go with T.J. Watt. He had two sacks and a forced fumble. I think he is going to eat poor Alex Leatherwood's lunch. Like we talked about with Max Crosby, the difference here is the Steelers have a fantastic front 7. Probably the best in football. You cannot devote all your assets to T.J. Watt, because if they do, then Melvin Ingram is going to have the 3 sacks that I'm kind of predicting here for T.J. Watt. I think this is going to be a crazy afternoon for one of the outside linebackers. Right now I'm saying it's T.J. Watt because they just simply can't force feed all the help to his side. I think T.J. Watt has one of these games where all of a sudden we're like, okay, 5 sacks in 2 games? Woo! This boy came to play. That hold-in really didn't mean much of anything. But
Jeffrey, I think on defense you got to watch out for Cam Hayward.
Oh, absolutely.
I think when you see T.J. Watt going off, Derek Carr is going to be creeping up. He's going to be pushing up, and Cam Hayward the way he played against Buffalo, if he does that in Oakland, if he does that against the Las Vegas Raiders, not the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, we're going to see him with multiple sacks.
Yeah, you know what? Cam Hayward was an absolute freak. He was my player of the game last week. But outside of that, Jeffrey Benedict, is there anything you want to plug for the people?
Yeah.
Go Vertex to the today.
Website. We did a Vertex on Cam Sutton this week, and I just did one on the Steelers pass rush where they blitzed twice in this game. It's the lowest blitz count I think since Keith Butler took over in 2015. I can't imagine there was anyone lower than two blitzes. And he did a great job. Dick LeBeau would be proud of the job he did with some of his creative blitzing. It's a great one to look at. Some of the stuff we did was just phenomenal.
Great stuff. Now, as we sign off here, I want to remind everyone to click over to BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. As we like to say, should be your one-stop shop for all things Pittsburgh Steelers. The great Vertex articles that Jeffrey and Dave put together are just outstanding. You learn about football and you learn about the Pittsburgh Steelers through those. So make sure you're reading each and every one of those. Their commentary, tons of other film room breakdowns, lists, previews, you name it. It is there at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. So make sure you're clicking over to that. And lastly, just make sure you are listening to the entire family podcast from Behind the Steel Curtain. 25 original titles. And that's typically we split a lot of our shows too. So that is more than 25 podcasts being uploaded each and every week for your listening pleasure. So make sure you are dialed in on that as well. If you love football, if you love the Pittsburgh Steelers, like we know most of you listening to this are, especially most of you that listen to an hour and 5 minutes of us two blabbering on about this team. So I know you love this team. So make sure you're following along. 5 stars, likes, whatever your podcast platform is that you listen to your podcast, just make sure you are dialed in there. So for my co-host, Jeffrey Benedict, my name is Michael Beck. Thank you for listening to Know Your Enemy. We will catch you guys next week. Go Steelers.